Okay, ladies and gentlemen, let's just a little bit light here, but let's get underway. The last time the question was actually placed on the US Census concerning how properties received sewage treatment was in 1990. I don't know how many of you can remember the year 1990, but it's quite a while ago. In the intervening years, of course, all Michigan local health departments have reported on an annual basis on their permitting and their regulatory actions concerning on-site wastewater systems. Now, unfortunately, the same data that was quoted back in 2004 when Governor Granholm addressed this is routinely being requoted without the benefit of revision. As recently as November of last year, the Bridge magazine put this in one of their articles. The Michigan Department of Environmental Quality estimates there are 130,000 failing systems currently operating in Michigan. That represents about 1 in 10 of more than 1.3 million systems that are installed statewide. DEQ further estimates that Michigan's numerous failing septic systems release upward of 31 million gallons of raw sewage every day into our groundwater. Now, this sounds kind of alarming until you remember that almost the identical quote was published in 2013, in 2006, and actually in 2004. So hyperbole and the disputed findings have certainly muddied the receiving waters from a true scientific discussion. The sentence in there too says, despite the tremendous public health threat posed by these failing systems, Michigan is the only state in the country without a uniform septic code. A tremendous public health threat? Really? Do we believe that? I think we can all agree that direct exposure to raw human sewage does indeed pose a risk to both the public and the environmental health. But if this is how all our on-site wastewater treatment systems are portrayed in Michigan, that certainly flies in the face of US and international research, technology, and regulation. Just remember, there are reasons the average life expectancy has more than doubled in this country in the past 100 years, and certainly a better understanding and implementation of on-site sanitation and safe drinking water technology, plus local regulatory oversight, is certainly one of those. Properly performing, appropriate on-site wastewater systems are not the ubiquitous stinking hole in the ground as they have been portrayed. They provide equal, often more affordable options for small community treatment and safe dispersal. Let's remember that this is part of the water cycle itself. The issue here today is how to define when they are not performing and how to bring them back into compliance, and perhaps more to the point, how are we going to pay for this? No, they are not appropriate for all locations, and no one would dispute the oversight and sound design, installation, O&M maintenance, licensing should be classed on the same footing as the constraints that are currently placed on municipal systems. And again, for a little perspective, EPA estimates there are at least 23,000 to 75,000 sanitary sewer overflows every year. In 2016 alone, Michigan reported that combined sewer overflows in the state discharged a volume of 25 billion gallons of treated wastewater. So in this process, I think we're all advocating for a little ramping down of the rhetoric and a little bit more perspective of the actual risk. And in fact, I put a copy of that 2016 report into the download folder, and we'll be bringing that back in at the close of the session if you didn't have time to get what you wanted from that while we were doing the introduction. So the push to enact the statewide baseline code routinely complains we are the only state without them. One, so we'll be looking today at the experience of one of our closest neighbors to see if indeed this is necessarily a bad thing or just an empty piece of rhetoric. In 2004, our organization, which had been going for about 2 years then, had two directors, two of our board of directors, which took place then in what was a substantive stakeholder group that met in public, published its minutes, its discussion documents, and they put a lot of effort into it, but ultimately really could not agree on what was enforceable, what was affordable, or even necessary. And several of attempts have taken place in the intervening years, and they've all been driven by different agendas and desired outcomes, but ultimately it all comes down to the money. Who's going to pay for it, and who will get paid for doing this? And if a system is found non-compliant, more importantly, where is the funding coming from to assist property owners to repair or replace and come back into compliance? There's no point in beating people over the head with a stick if you don't give them something to repair the problem in the first place. So with the advent of this current process, and in light of many misconceptions and an obvious sense of distrust out there, our organization was asked to conduct this roundtable event to look at what was actually in the draft, to look at the source as opposed to what many people may have thought was in the source. The timing is really appropriate because, of course, March 11th through 17th is Sunshine Week. And it is our belief, and we've routinely practiced this, that consensus based on a civil discourse is never a bad thing. In 2004, we published a set of proposed compromises, suggesting that rather than a one-size-fits-all approach, that we would look instead at the regional differences within Michigan and establish some kind of regional structures that were based on the local health agencies. And here we are 14 years later, when the concept of one water and the one water management is now endorsed by almost all major water environmental agencies. It would seem to be an appropriate time to take another look at allowing for that kind of regional approach, which identifies water management issues based on the soils, the geology, the demographics. And, you know, we need to give a shout out to the Northwest Michigan Health Department because that's what they do, and it seems to be working extremely well for them. So for the past 3 years, we need to remember that we have been an active partner of the Great Lakes Commission on their Fractured Waters Initiative, which has sought to identify cost-effective means of implementing water management systems that cross political boundaries. I have yet to see a water source that stops at a dead line and says, nope, can't go any further, that's Oakland County, we don't do anything there. So that's why we have our logo, that water is water, not waste. And when we talk about disposal, which I hope will be removed and replaced by dispersal in this document, exactly what do we think it is, and exactly where do we think it goes? And I'll put the link to that Great Lakes project into the chat window. And remember that anything that's in there can be copied and pasted, and after the event, you can copy and paste the whole thing if you want to. The reason for hosting this is that we really firmly believe, my board of directors, that scare tactics and politics have no place in any agreement that seeks to protect the waters and the citizens of Michigan. On this, I think we can all agree. If the average adult, which the Pew Charitable Trust has reported, has barely an eighth grade memory of their basic physics, biology, and chemistry classes before they got to high school, how we frame this discussion really matters. The article we quoted closes like this: until then, beware that that beautiful northern Michigan stream may not be quite as pure as you'd expect in pure Michigan. You know, this obviously flies in the face of a basic understanding of biology. And as we were discussing before this event started, until we can pass legislation that prohibits human beings from having bodily functions, we will have to have a serious discussion about how health departments manage this issue. And at this point, what I'd like to do, actually, is bring in Jason Menschaffer, who's with Mercer County in Ohio. Jason, take it away and tell us how this issue was handled in Ohio.